First of all, Shalom, good to see everybody. Second of all, if it's late, if you want to leave, I will not at any time. Please feel free to leave. Okay. It's bad. Okay. Okay. So, it's almost okay. I'm not sure if we're comfortable. I would like, if possible, to learn with you a sugya in Medrash, and a sugya in Medrash relevant to Purim. That it's a famous Medrash, perhaps one of the most famous Midrashim on Purim, because it has been enshrined by hundreds, if not tens of thousands, of little girls in their Purim costumes. Where you see a nice little girl dressed in a wedding dress with a crown, with little dots on her face and a bushy tail. Right, so that's the famous, that's the classic Purim costume, the little girl dressed up as Vashti, and based on the Gemara, a Midrashic Gemara, an Agadeic Gemara, and we get Maseches Megillah, and it's a number one, it's a good sort of like thank you very very much, it's a good case study in learning the Medrash, but it also, I think, is Megal, it also reveals very significant things with regard to Purim, with regard to the whole Yom Tov of Purim, and with regard to many other related things. Okay. So we'll start with the Gemara, quickly with the Gemara. I'll try to move as quickly as we can. The Gemara says in Megillah, on Afid Yubeis Amid Beis, that on the seventh day, when the king's heart was already joyful from the wine, from the party, so the Gemara says it took him 7 days to get tipsy. It took him 7 days to get excited, says the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yemashvi, Shabbos Hayesh Yisrael, Eichem V'Shayisim, Maschilim Divrei Torah V'Divrei Tishbachos. It was Yemashvi, when we say by Yemashvi, it was a Shabbos. And this event happened on Shabbos in order to demonstrate contrast between a Jew and between the people of Achashverosh and his people, Achashverosh and his party. On the seventh day, on a regular seventh day, Jews also eat and drink. We also feast. We have Suda Shabbos. And what do we do from our Suda Shabbos? We say the Divrei Torah and Shiras V'Sishbochais and Zmiras to Hashem. But in this party of the Avdei Kechavim, when they ate and drank, what did they do? They ended up with all kinds of immorality. What happens in the Suda? They say, "Rosh, halolu aimer madi yis nois, halolu aimer parsi yis nois." What were their great debates about? Wasn't a heated debate about a question on the parsha. It was whose women are more beautiful. So what did Achashverosh say? Amar lem Achashverosh, "Kli shani mishtamish," by the most derisive term, the kli that I use, "Einai leimadi v'lei parsi alakazdi." You'll see how beautiful she is. They said, yes, but she has to come out aruma. She has to come out unclothed. Says the Medrash, says the Gemara, Shemidashana maided ba maided imlai. And why was Vashti having to suffer this indignity? Because this was what Vashti in turn did. That she had B'nais Yisrael, she had Jewish women who would serve her. And Mafshita aruma, she made them appear before her unclothed. And she did with the malacha on Shabbos. So on a Shabbos, the drunkenness of the goyim led to her being summoned to come unclothed. So it says the Gemara. Again, in Darshan Zachas Ves Vashti Ves Asher Asasa, Vatzmeina Malka Vashti. But she refused to come. And the Gemara is troubled by this. Why did she refuse to come? Vashti, the Gemara says, she also Shneim Udvaraver Niskavna. It says that Gam Vashti Amach Asa Mishtei Nashim, right? So it sounds like Williamsburg, right? There was a party for the men in one building, there was a party for the women in another building. Says, well, no, each one had their own immoral designs. They both were Miskavim L'Dvar Avera. So if she's into Dvar Avera, so then this summons is an opportunity. It's not a punishment. Why didn't she come? So here comes, say Chazal, the famous things. Amar Rav Yosef, Chanina Melamed Shebarach HaBatzaras, He says that she developed tzaras from Masnisa Tana, but Gabriel Vyasalazana. Gabriel came and made her a tail. Why do you get so upset? Amar Rav Shochel Bar Ahurayre the Abba, stable hand of my father. Abba Lekabel Alpo Cham Rashasi, my father, my grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. Right, he drank 1,000 such measures of wine v'le Ravi, and he didn't become shikur. And you drank a little bit v'shtati shtati b'chamri, you became foolish in your wine. So he was ridiculed relative to her father. It's a very rich passage here of Agada, so many elements, but included in it is this description, this very amusing description that Vashti couldn't show up because she either got tzaras, she broke out, right, so she was embarrassed to go to the party, or she grew a tail. And like, what on earth does that mean, that she grew a tail? What kind of a thing is this? Of course, anything is possible. But does that mean that any of these things, anything of these things happen? So first of all, Rishonim, like the Rashba has a separate volume, very small volume, but where he explains a small sampling of Agodas Hashas, and this is one of them. And the Rashba writes in the Rashba Al Hagodos, he says, what does the word Zanav mean? What does the word Zanav mean? If translated, is that Hashem came, or that Gabriel came and made her a tail. A Zanav is the word for a tail, but is that all that Zanav means? When you make the Yiratzan and Rosh Hashanah, Shania L'Raish V'Loy L'Zanav, what do you mean? You were worried that you were going to become one of those long, snaky things with a pom-pom on the end? Like, what does it mean when we say that tefillah? So he says, Kvar yadata shekino aksuv mechomokem gav nivei chazal harayish l'chol kotze choshev shebedover v'azonav l'kotze agarua shebohi. Chazal always speak about the reish as the significant part and the zonav as the trivial part. And so he says, Hushal'oi, the term zanav, is used for anything insignificant. L'chol davar yivalei bo'adam, she'ein tzarech bo'ay. For anything that develops in a person that's unnecessary, that's not functional. For example, ki aboilois hamizgadlois bo'adam, v'naseis ki aiseres. Like boils. Like some kind of a pimple that grows on the person. Some kind of a growth that develops on the person that's not needed. What function does a tail have? Okay, so I think some of them, they use them sometimes to swat flies or something like that, right? But basically, it's like a yeseres, right? The language which you find in Mishnah and Gemara, it refers to yeseres, which is like an extra limb. If a person has an extra, like almost a sixth finger, it's called a yeseres. It's a biblical word, yeseres hakaved, but there it may refer to the diaphragm, whatever it is, it's, you know, something which is not quite the way it's used in Mishnah as yeseres. So he says that's what it means. It means that there was a little extra growth that grew on her, and say one says that she got tzaras, that discoloration of the skin, and the other one says she grew something, she grew a wart, and that's what it was. That's what the Rashba says. So much for the Purim costume. But it makes Chazal describe something much more natural and less fantastic. And usually we would say that that's a good thing. You know, it becomes less challenging to the rational. The Marsha, fascinatingly, who, if one sees the Marsha consistently, the Marsha liked to always explain the depths of what Chazal were saying. But he was not inclined to do so by saying that Chazal didn't mean it literally. And even in the Agodos of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, which are over the top, the Marsha says, don't say it's not poshut. Don't say whether they didn't see a frog that was that big. They saw a frog that was that big. But what's the meaning of seeing a frog that's that big? You know, this is what it is. So the Marsha here, Kedarkai, quotes the Oruch. Right, the Oruch is the original Talmudic dictionary, right? Marcus Jastrow's great grandfather. Just kidding, right? the original Talmudic dictionary, and the Oruch says, "Kol davar shu yeser she'ena kaminas chaver kari zanav." Anything which is extra, which doesn't fit proportionally with everything else, is called a zanav, and that's what it means over here. It's called a zanav. Says Marsha, I don't know what forced him to say that. Lo yadana mi afrisha lefarshkach. V'emet zanav namashas, look at him, he made a tail like an animal. V'chiyagana aminu v'per karaya. And says the Marsha, to support his case, that's what it says in Maseches Brachas. V'adam harishan shenivre bezanav, shenivres v'menu chava. Adam harishan was created with a tail. And that tail was taken off to build chava. There's one opinion that he was a two-sided creature, a partsuf, do partsufim, androgynous, whatever it is, male, female, and split in two. But the other opinion was that there was a zanav, and from that zanav was built chava. So he says, Adam Rishon had a tail, so why couldn't Rashi have a tail? Of course, if you look in the Rashba says, when he says, he quotes also the Gemara, he says, and that's what it means in the Gemara, when it says that Adam Rishon had a zanav, it means that he had a little extra growth and he took it off and built that into man, not that it was a tail of an animal. So you can interpret it literally, or you can interpret it non-literally. And I think sort of that, we're in Mirza Hashem going to spend our time talking about it as a real tail. Whether it was really a tail or it wasn't really a tail, but the language, Chazal didn't say, Bo Gavriel vi Osola Avabua. Right? It shows a language which was rich, which was zanav. So whether it literally happened that way, like the Marsha, whether it didn't literally happen, it's an important thing to study. And we're going to spend most of our time, starting in 2 minutes, talking about that. However, noting what the Rashba says, what the Aruch says, is extremely important. Because when we read Medrash, we don't want to be Emilia Bedelia. Everybody learned the Medrash of Emilia Bedelia, I assume, right? You know the Emilia Bedelia books. Emilia Bedelia, whatever you say, she takes exactly literally. When Mrs. Rogers asks her to take the spots out of the dress, so she takes the scissors and she cuts out all the polka dots, right, from the dress. No discrimination. We could listen to Chazal's idiom and not realize what they're saying. We could say Zanav means this, and therefore that's what it must mean. And that's what the Rashba, that's what the Aruch said. Hold on. Zanav, sure, it means a tail, but a tail means, right, when you say Shanil Rosh V'Leil Zanav, you don't mean, we don't want to be a tail. You mean, I don't want to be something which is extra, which is redundant. That's all that it means, a growth. Okay. But let's look a little bit here at this as a Zanav. Think for a moment about what we saw here in this Chazal. Even just this little narrow keta, this little narrow piece. Ahasuerus said, with the urging of his guests, she must come before us aruma, unclothed. And Gavriel came and made her a zanav, made her a tail. How does that strike you? Anybody want to hazard a common denominator between those two things?
He made her superfluous, and she became superfluous.
Okay. You're interpreting zanav in the non-literal fashion. Okay. How about if we interpret zanav in the literal fashion? Like a behemoth. You're going to have her walking around unclothed. Who walks around unclothed? A behemoth. If you're a behemoth, you might as well have a tail. Okay? Simple. So far, simple, straightforward. We could say it that way, simply and straightforwardly. What I would like to do is really just expand on that. Expand on that idea. That was what was happening here. That there's a dynamic here of becoming like a behemoth. When he has her grow a zanav, it's like a behemoth. maybe it's again a response to being called out that way, to come out unclothed like a behemoth. But let's look at it for a little bit more of its significance than just saying that they were acting in an animalistic fashion, which again is part of the message. So I read to you the whole Gemara, it's part of the whole message of the Gemara, is that here we eat and we drink and we sing Zmiras and we say Divrei Torah, but they ate and drank and they became degenerate and they became like a behemoth. Let's try to look at it a little bit. Let's try to look at it a little bit more. The Gemara in Megillah says, and I never learned this with any of you, did I? Did we ever? I don't remember ever came here. Okay. The Gemara in Megillah says, really, one blot earlier on Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara says, very famous Gemara, that when Ahasuerus made his Suda, when Ahasuerus made his feast, so he made his feast because he calculated that the 70 years of Golus Bavel were over, and the Jewish people weren't redeemed. And he said that, look, people before me, Belshazzar, right, Chashav etah, Belshazzar made such a calculation, and he made a mistake. Belshazzar had also calculated, right, in the book of Daniel, the handwriting on the wall, he had calculated that the 70 years of Golus Bavel was over. He took out the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to use them for his own party, for his own purpose, and he was killed. When Ahasuerus said, oh, he made a mistake, it was premature, he calculated wrongly, I'm going to calculate again from a different starting point. And he calculated, and what happened? So he also made a mistake. And what happened as a result? And Vashti was killed. Why did Vashti get killed? Because of this mistake. Right? He was luckier than Belshazzar. Why did Vashti get killed? So Vashti, as we alluded to in the Gemara, which we quoted before, Vashti was really the Malchus of Ahasuerus. In the truest sense, Vashti was really the claim to the Malchus of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus was a son-in-law who got the position. Vashti was the one with royal blood. And Ahasuerus got it through her. What was her royal ancestry? Her royal ancestry was, she was Bas B'nai Shel Nebuchadnezzar. It says she was the granddaughter, the daughter of the son of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, there's a story about Nebuchadnezzar that you have to know, I think, when you read this Medrash. What's the story of Nebuchadnezzar? It's a story which is told in Sefer Daniel. Daniel tells the story of Daniel and Bavel. The king is Nebuchadnezzar, a fascinating relationship which existed between Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar altogether is a very fascinating personality. Lots of things about him are very, and some things about him are quite striking in the opposite direction. What happened? I'll read to you a little bit. L'tzas yarchen treyosar, alhecha malchusa di Bavel mahalachava. After 12 months he was walking. The psukim before tell a story about Daniel actually giving Nebuchadnezzar an Eitzah, which actually gave him a little bit of a stay. I have this yet? Did I make a brother?
You did.
I did. And he says, Ana Malka Vamar Halodohi Bavel Rapsodi Ana Benisa Leves Malka Bit Kaf Chasne Lekar Hadre. He says, look at this great Bavel that I built it into my kingdom with my great strength and for my glory. A milsa b'pum malka, while those words were still coming out of the mouth of Nebuchadnezzar, kol min shemaya nafal, loch amin Nebuchadnezzar malka malchusa ados mina. A voice came in the heavens and said, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, you're losing your kingdom. O min insh anasha l'cha tardin, I'm going to actually remove you from being amongst people. V'imchevas b'ra midorach. You will live with the animals of the field. Ispa keturin lochitamun. You're going to munch on grass like oxen. Vishiva idoni nichalfun alech adi tinda di shalit ilah b'malchus anasha ulamadi itzva yitana. And you'll go through 7 periods until you will realize that kingdom comes from Hashem and He gives it to who He wants. You are so full of yourself. You say, I am Nebuchadnezzar, with my great power I build this throne, I build this kingdom for myself and for my glory. I'm going to show you a thing or two. And that's exactly what happened. Bashosa milsa sofas on Nebuchadnezzar, something came over Nebuchadnezzar right then and there. Uminenosha torid, and he left the ranks of people. The ispa kiturin yechal, umital shemaya gishma yitzdaba. He ate the grass, and he bathed in the waters of the dews of the sky. Adisara kenishin rabba, v'tafray kitziparin, till his hair grew long, and his fingernails like claws. Uluktas yuma ana Nebuchadnezzar in l'shemaya notlas umande ala Yosef. Ulila birchas ulche alma shabachas v'hadras di shultana shulat alam achusayim dar. And one day, Nebuchadnezzar, this, I don't know what he was, a werewolf, a chvesna, she was like, whatever he had become, he looks up to the heavens, and suddenly, a bell goes off, and he recognizes the God of the heavens. And suddenly, he says, Hashem has the kingdom over the whole world. V'chol diyori arakalach hashivin, and no person is anything, so to speak, relative in power to Hashem, and so on and so forth. Nobody can stop Hashem. And when he had that realization, his mind came back to him, and he returned to his throne, and so on and so forth. And Nebuchadnezzar, to his great credit, publicized the story. He publicized the story in his kingdom as an act of the greatest humility before the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, who had everybody bow down to his statue and so on and so forth, Nebuchadnezzar had this burst of insight, and he shared it. Okay. Now, you are Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughter. You know the story? Everybody knows the story. You stand in front of the mirror and you see a bushy tail. What do you think? Uh-oh. Here we go again. I mean, this is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Nebuchadnezzar into one of the chevas bera, into one of the animals of the wild, literally roaming the forests, munching on grass with claws and long hair, because somehow he forgot who was above him. He forgot the Ribbono Shel Olam. And so his grandchild experiences a little bit of the same right here. What is this? What's going on? So this alone, I think, is a very significant piece of flashback. Now I want to take you to Bereshis, and we'll learn a little bit of Bereshis, so hopefully we'll be able to understand this, I think, I hope, all a little bit better. We're talking here about people and animals, and the difference between people and animals. We talk about, look what happened to them when they ate and they drank. They became like animals. We talk about the challenge, what the transformation of Nebuchadnezzar. But we also talk here about the zonav, about the tail, and about the incident where HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Chava from the Zanav, according to the Gemara, of Adam Arishan, according to one opinion at least. So let's look at that story briefly. Vayemer Hashem Elokim. Leitoiv hayayis adam levadai esa lo ezer kenegdai. Hashem said, it's not good for man to be alone. I want to make him a helpmate opposite. Vayiter Hashem Elokim in ha'adam kol chayas hasadeh v'eskolev ha'shamayim. Please, you've heard this 100 times. Here one more time. Listen carefully. We'll just get what's happening here in this story. And Hashem formed from the earth all of the animals, all of the birds, and he brought them to man, Liris Mayikralai. Adam named each creature, let's say, we'll go with the Ramban, each creature according to its nature. He named them all the animals, all the birds. But for man, he found no Ezer Kenegdai. So, what happened here? Hashem said, it's not good for man to be alone. He should have an Ezer Kenegdai. Hashem brings to him, creates and brings him all of the animals, and man looks at each and every one of them. And what is he evidently looking for? He's looking for that Ezer Kenegdai. Right? Have I got a rhinoceros for you? Right? And what happens? None of them really go. Lo Adam leMotza Ezer Kenegdai. Vayapel Hashem leKim Tardeima lo Adam vayishan, and Hashem put man to sleep. And he takes achas mitaloisav, he takes a piece of him, which we have this debate in the Gemara, whether it was a whole side of him, whether it was a zonav, and he closes the wound, and he builds that into a woman, and he brings her to man, and man says, what would you say when you finally meet your Bashert? What would you say, especially if you're from California? What would you say? You would say, I would say, that's my soulmate. Right? Would you say that? What did he say? He said, Zaysafam etzem me'atzamay u'bosam me'besari. This is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. This is not my soulmate, my bodymate. Zaysi kare isha ki me'ish lukacha zaysi. This shall be called woman because she was taken from man. And thus, and henceforth, man will leave his father and mother and attach himself to his wife. Vayulu basar achad, they shall become like one flesh. Vayush nehem arumim adam v'yishtay, and they were both unclothed, man and his wife. V'layish v'yashu, and they were not ashamed. What happened here? Hashem wants to find a mate for man. All these other creatures have a lot to do with man. Hashem created on the sixth day of creation the animals and the people. He created them so similarly that there are all kinds of people who have theories as to how related we are. And they're not new theories. The Medrash says, the Gemara says, that from Dar Enosh, people's faces started looking like the faces of monkeys. Nasipnei Adam kipnei Akar. It didn't take Darwin to figure that out. His theory is not what the method says. But we're very, very similar. So look, I mean, I've met worse shachanim. Trust me. Right? You know, so they go, try this, try that. See? Maybe it'll work. Maybe it'll work. What's the failure? Why doesn't it work? A man is not a behemoth. A man is not an animal. Why isn't a man an animal? Why is Darwin wrong? Because we have an neshama. The Ramban, okay, I will say this at the risk of getting in trouble, always this Ramban, but it's a Ramban. Ramban on Vayi Adam Lenefesh Chaya says that man lived and breathed and walked around before he had a neshama. He was an animal who walked around before he had a neshama. And then Hashem put him into a neshama, and then he started speaking. Then he became a human being. That's why he says, that's why the Targum translates, Vayadam lenefesh chaya, vahavas ba'adam leruach memalala. Not because he started breathing then. If he started breathing then, he would have said, and he became alive. But he was alive before. Just like animals are alive without a neshama blown into them from Hashem. They have an organic soul. They have life that comes from the earth. But when Hashem blew into this living being a neshama, then he became a ruach mamala. Then he became a speaking being. what distinguishes man from beast, where Darwin is wrong, is that Darwin says we're the same fundamental creature, just a little bit more refined. No, it was a lightning bolt. It was an ingredient that was inserted into man at a certain point in time, called the neshama. Whether you subscribe to the Ramban or you don't subscribe to the Ramban, whether he was ever a monkey without a soul and then he became a monkey with a soul, or whether to begin with he was created with the neshama, it doesn't make a difference for our purposes. The point is that the neshama is an ingredient which exists in man, which doesn't exist in any other creature. And it was put in there by an insertion from Hashem. It wasn't a gradual evolutionary process that creates a whole new thing. Gradual evolutionary processes increase or enhance that which is already there. This was something which is entirely new that was put in Adam. And that's what makes man different than an animal. And because we have an Hashem and they don't. But that wasn't Adam Arishan's comment. Adam Arishan's comment was, she's bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Why do you think so? Fair question? You understand my question? Okay. I'll hold the question for a little bit. So Adam tries, he meets all these animals, not for me. He finds the woman, it's for him. What's the very next story? The very next story is the snake comes up to Chava. And what's the snake doing when it comes up to Chava? So we have the explicit parsha where it says that the snake is trying to get Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas. What do Chazal read into this parsha? You know, Chazal say, Rashi brings snippets of the Chazal. The snake wanted to marry Chava. According to Chazal, the snake did have relations with Chava. Bo nochash vehitil bo zuama. It took till Matan Torah for the Jews to be purged of the corruption created by that act which the snake did with Chava. It's amazing. Adam HaRishon went out with all the animals and rejected them. And Chava, right after that, gets propositioned by the snake. So you can talk about why Chava was more vulnerable to this than Adam. Adam was missing something. He tried, it didn't fill the gap. And then he saw Chava. Chava was born with a husband. She was born from her husband. She was never missing anything. She always had it. So, you know, usually the thing is when you're missing something, you know what you need. When you have it, you may not realize what you have. You know, you could be very, we could say a nice little Sheva Bracha speech about that, right? That may be the reality. That's in fact how the Ramban explains why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had him go through the whole process of meeting everything until, Zayis HaPam, this is it. But Chava never missed. Chava never had Zayis HaPam. She had it from the beginning. Look, maybe. But the transition itself is extremely significant. Right? The Nachash, what the Nachash does to come in this way, to be able to come to Chava. And he succeeds to some degree in saying that there wasn't such a difference between us and them. Till in the end, HaKadosh Baruch, they eat from the Eitz Hadas, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives punishments to consequences to Adam and consequences to Chava and a consequence to the snake. And the consequence to the snake we know is that it sidled up to Chava, it acted as if it could marry Chava, was able to talk to Chava, however that happened, and now, no way. Eva Oshis Bein Chovein Aisha, the greatest distance was created between Chava and the snake, between humankind and the snakes too. Repulsed by it. And it slithers along the ground. It's as far away from a human being who are Mahalchei Shnayim, who walk on two, who are unique, that we walk on two legs and stand upright. The snake is slithering along in the offer. Again, you know, like part of this thing, part of this transformation. And in this transformation, before the Nachash, men walked around unclothed. The signal of the Parsha is that as soon as they ate from the Eitz Hadas, now they realize that they can't walk around unclothed. What's going on here? So I would like to suggest to you the following idea that is here in the text. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew into man in Neshama, whether he was living and breathing before like the Ramban or whether he wasn't, so he was a human being, he was a being with a Neshama inside of him. What does that mean? If I have a folder, a manila folder, and I put into it this page of Torah, and I carry it around, and then, you know, a couple of weeks, I have to go to my accountant to give him the stuff for my taxes, so I'm looking for a folder. He says, you know what, I'm going to take this out and put it in my drawer, and I'm going to use the same folder, I'm going to put in it my W-2s, and I'm going to take it to my accountant. Did the folder change? It's the same folder. Yesterday it had in it some Torah notes, and today it has in it some W-2s. It's the same folder. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the Neshama into the body of Adam, which was created from the earth, on the sixth day, on the same day that Hashem created the animals, maybe even with the animals, like the Ramban. And then Hashem blew into it a Neshama. What was it? Was it an animal with a Neshama rattling around inside of it? It wasn't. One indication of that is that he was supposed to live forever. Animals don't live forever. Neshamas live forever. But bodies of animals don't live forever. Right? Ramban writes that there were those who object to the understanding of Chazal that a person, that he would have lived forever if he had not eaten from the Eitz Hadas. Because after all, Hatocha Harkava Meira Lehefsek, of course he's going to come apart. He's a physical being. But no. When the neshama goes in there, it transforms the guf into something else. When Chazal say that Adam Arishon, the heels of his feet, which are normally the most calloused and tough and dark parts of the skin of a person, they would make the sun pale in comparison to the brightness which emanated from the heels of his soles, they're saying because the neshama would have infused and transformed the guf, just like we find generations later in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu's face shine? Because the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu was so energized and activated because of his encounter with Hashem. It's not that the radiance of Hashem spilled onto the skin of Moshe Rabbeinu from the outside. It was that the neshama that was inside Moshe Rabbeinu radiated outwards and influenced and changed his whole being, his whole character. That's what it should be. It's not a piece of paper in a file folder. The neshama and the guf, they become together, so one transforms the other. When Adam Arishon met Chava, she was taken from a piece of his body. But she was bone of his bone, flesh of his flesh. Her physicality was like his physicality, which was nothing like the animal physicality. Because the animal was physicality that never had an neshama infused into it, injected into it. But the body of Chava, taken from the body of Adam, was different. The before and after. Before the neshama, you could have read him to any rhinoceros, to any monkey for sure. But now, qualitative change. We have nothing left to compare us to animals. We walked around arumim without shame, naked without shame. How do we walk around naked without shame before the chet? So, according to what we're describing here, we can easily understand why. because the body wasn't embarrassing. The body was, in itself, radiant with the light of the neshama. It was spiritualized. It wasn't a soul. We walk around and we're a little bit embarrassed of our physicality, because our physicality is not our highest thing. You know, we all like to be enchanted by the ideas of sanctifying our physicality, but we know that we have a ways to go in order to be able to accomplish that. And so our physicality, our guf, is a little bit, you know, it's like if the prince is wearing a stained garment, or just, you know, he's wearing a suit from a chveis from Sears, right? So he's a little bit embarrassed, right? He's got to go to, I don't know, to Brooks Brothers, and do it. So, you know, if the neshama's in a physical body, it's like, but when the body is transformed into something that only a neshama can make it into, there's no shame. At the chet of the Eitz Hadas, what happened was that the nachash, whatever that being of the nachash was, we don't have the time here to talk at great length about it, but whatever that nachash was, that nachash was that of the animal kingdom. Orum mikol chayas hasada. It was the one that was able to sidle up closest to man, be able to communicate with him, be able to say, you know something, it's true that you have a neshama, but you're not completely removed and completely different from us. That was the one, you know, to be able to find that point of vulnerability, that point of contact between the, and he found it, and he exploited it. And Chava went to be able to some degree feel connection to Behema. And then what happened? Then our bodies became again like the body of a Behema, where the Neshama did not infuse it and did not carry in that sense its light. Think about it. When Adam tried all the Behemas and said, they're not for me, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? According to that opinion in the Gemara, he took off his zanav, he took off his tail. From that he created the woman. He said, you're not like the animals. The animals have tails. You don't have a tail. You're different than them. Your physicality is different than them. You're transformed. You are different. You're not a behema bichlau. And he made that difference and created, therefore, a physical mate of Adam HaRishon with that same shining, resplendent physicality that Adam himself had. And then when the snake sidled up to Chava, the snake that, according to Chazal, was actually Mahalach Shtayim, it walked on two legs, not on four. So similar to man, walked up to Chava and tried to claim, you know, you're really just an animal like us, to reverse the thing. So what happened? So we lost a little bit and we came a little bit more animalistic. But what happened to the Nachash? Hashem said, you will never relate to man again. And what did he do? He made the Nachash al zanav. The Nachash is one big tail. That's why the Nachash has no commonality after the fact with Adam. But when we come to Vashti, we come to a situation where you have people who are acting like the Behemoth. They eat and they drink, and from that they can only talk about vulgarities. And this one says, the kli that I use is more beautiful than the kli that you use. That's not celibate like him. That's not etzami atzami ubasami basari. This was descending into the animalistic. And therefore it would come with all of its trappings. Okay. a little more rich. And you could understand it. Okay, I'm going to take a few more minutes, okay? You can understand it, and this is a very important direction to go in. That because this Gemara is saying, that's the contrast, Bayayim HaShvi'i, Ketayv Leim HaMelech Bayayim, on the seventh day, that's when we saw the difference between what a Jew does when he eats and drinks, and what they do when they eat and drink. That's why part of the Avodah of Purim is that we eat and we drink, and nevertheless we try to show that just the physicality of a human being, of a Yisrael, is supposed to be raised. When a Jew eats and drinks on Purim and becomes vulgar, it's geferlach. It's terrible. That's Tzuras HaChashverosh. When a Jew eats and drinks on Purim and has a Suda with Divrei Torah, with Zmiras, like the Gemara says, then they're mamish saying, we have a different etzem, we have a different basar. It's something else that becomes part of the story. Well, let's just take one more step back to the Chumash and back to Nebuchadnezzar. The snake got Chava to eat. How did she get Chava to eat? How did he get Chava to eat? He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you you can't eat from any of the trees in the garden, right? He says, no, Hashem said we could eat from all places in the garden. He just says, don't eat from this tree because this tree is bad for us. Hashem wants us to have good. He lets us eat from all the things that are good for us, but from this tree he doesn't let us have because it's bad for us. It's going to kill us. And the Nachash says, no, it's not going to kill you. The reason why Hashem doesn't want you to eat from that is because he knows that on the day that you eat from it, you will be like Hashem. And so Hashem wants to keep you down there. He wants to be on top. And so the snake said to Chava, eat it and you will be like God. The snake, you understand, of course, was most upset because man was on top of the snake. And he and all of the animals had been spurned by man as being lower than man. He hated being lower than anything else. And he made the case to Chava, who was above everything else, that she wasn't quite above everything else. She was still below God. And she didn't have to be. She could also be. They could also be like God. That was the Eitzah of the Nachash. That was the problem which he made her have, which made her eat from the Eitz HaDas, that they wouldn't be below God. And that was the Chet of Nebuchadnezzar. That thinking that we don't want to be below God is not the thinking of a Tzelem Elokim. A Tzelem Elokim is that which is receptive to Hashem. A Tzelem Elokim which is receptive to Hashem, that's Mekabel Malchus Shamayim. A Tzelem Elokim that's receptive to Hashem allows HaKadosh Baruch Hu to pervade the person. Isn't it the most amazing thing in the world? The snake said, Hashem doesn't want you to be like him. When in the pasuk we read, it says Hashem created man because he wanted man to be in the image of Hashem. B'tzelem Elokim bara Yisai. Hashem wanted us to be like him. And if we would just submit to being under Hashem, we become exactly like Hashem. We become B'tzelem Elokim. The one who doesn't want to be under Hashem is the one who's doomed to remain a behemah. Not letting Hashem pervade his being. Not letting Hashem transform every part of his life. That is the one who ends up like the behemoth. The argument of the snake to Chava was, don't accept that Hashem is over you. And as soon as she did that, she became that much more like a behemoth. And so did Nebuchadnezzar. we want the result, that we want to be godly beings, kelakim. The way we become godly beings is by being humble beings that recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above us. That recognize very, very strongly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above us. And the more there is an illusion of human power, usually the more difficult it is for us to realize that there's a God above us. You know the famous thing? Tayv Shabarayfim Legehenim. Is anybody here a doctor? Sorry. Right? You know the Tayv Shabarayfim Legehenim. So you know what they said? It's a famous vertel that the Welt says. Why? Because Tayv is Gematria 17. So they say, Tayv Shabarayfim Legehenim, because the Reife sometimes says, I'll take care of that. Right? So they cut out one bracha from the Shemoneh Esrei. So they say, Tayv Shabarayfim Legehenim. That's the vertel that the Welt likes to say. Because it's an expression. A doctor plays God. Right? But everybody, in whatever they do, finds some way to try to play God. The more power you have, the more likely you are to think that you can be like God and you don't have to be deferential to God. And therefore, the less godly you become, the less aware, the less open you are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the less godly you become. And isn't it the most beautiful irony that if there's a yontiv which celebrates a Yeshua and a salvation which Kol Yisrael experienced, which is one where the most human power was exercised. Pesach gave us no illusions of human power. It was clearly the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even Chanukah didn't give us illusions of human power between the Rabbim B'Yad Ma'atim and the Neis HaShemen. But Purim? Purim is APAC. Purim is lobbying efforts. Purim is Megillas Esther, Mordechai HaYehudi. It's the hand of man. The greatest illusion of human power is in the story of Purim. And yet, what did Kol Yisrael do? They said, it's the Rabbanu Shel Olam. We were Mekabel the Torah, when Hashem didn't impose himself, we said, but we realize it's the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And in that Yontiv, we celebrate most how a human being is not an animal. That the goof, yeah, the goof of the human being is different. Our physicality is different. We celebrate with mishta. It's supposed to accent that our whole being is different. Because we're makabel o malchus shamayim, despite the greatest temptation to the contrary. Vashti grew a tail. Achashverosh, with his pretenses, with his power, Hashem is out of business. Right? 70 years have passed, there's no Beis HaMikdash. I drink from it. I drink from the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. I'm in charge now. There is no more God. Al Morei Shemaya Hisrei Mamta. And together with that comes the ugliest, most animal expression of human beings. And that's what does Vashti in, as she joins the party. That's the tale that Vashti grows. And what we're supposed to take from all of this, the difference of Esther, the chut shel chesed of Esther, is that with all the power, there's only one power. It's the power of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And with all the power, we embrace the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and it changes every fiber of our being. So that even etz atzmeinu ubisareinu is something else. Those are the thoughts. Clear? All clear?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why does Chava, who also I assume is permeated with the neshama that extends out through the roof, Why does she tricked by such a lowly behemoth?
So, it's a great question. How is she able to be tricked? So, again, the Nachash was the highest behemoth that we could imagine. It was beyond what we could imagine. Right? The Nachash, right? Everybody saw, what's he doing speaking to Chava? How does the Nachash speak to Chava? It's, right? Some Rishonim have this theory that it was like Bilam's donkey. You know, but they say that's not the way it's described in the Pasuk. By Bilam's donkey, it says, Hashem put words in the mouth of Bilam's donkey. It was clearly miraculous. Here, it's like, it's a conversation which is happening. There's a point where it's a little closer. Now, Adam HaRishon, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew into him the neshama, the snake didn't even approach. Chava, where it was organic, where it just, Hashem never blew into, it doesn't say in the Pasuk that Hashem ever blew into Chava neshama. Her neshama was within the physicality. So, it goes like that. There's a medrash, you have to be very careful. Do not repeat this at home. I hope your wife is sleeping. Just kidding. There's a medrash which says the following thing. You have to be very careful with it because it could be really, really grossly misunderstood. But it's a very strong medrash. The medrash says, note that what's the name Chava? What's her name? Her name is Chava. What is a snake in Aramaic? Chivya. Says the Medrash, Chivya Chivyech Va'at Chivya the Adam. The snake is your snake, Chava, and you are Adam's snake. In other words, the snake got Chava to sin, and Chava got Adam to sin, because it was somehow able to, you know, to travel these lengths. And, you know, in a certain sense, of course, that has its own expression. Women are not instructed, mandated to study Torah, to have, so to speak, the breath of Hashem into their mouth. They're not instructed to do so. What is their mandate? Their mandate is to show the presence of the Torah in everyday life, in the way life is lived, in the way you eat and you drink and you dress, in the bias. Now, that's the most fantastic thing. That's the expression of the realization of Purim. But on the other hand, sometimes it also can be that the woman will say, all I'm doing is doing this, that, and the other. I don't feel such a connection. Right? That's sort of a very pedestrian way to see how the Chava snake thing works different than the other snake thing works. It's easier to get talked into when it's more hidden within the confines of nature.
Just one last question from me. This is a very dangerous thing because I don't know anything about it. But the story there, I've always heard that there's a concept of Lilith. Does that play into that at all, that story, or is it just not for now?
It plays into it and it's not for now.
At least I knew that.
What's the sequence of events with Hitzelbuzu Zuama?
What do you mean? When did it happen in the story?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know, to separate it even from the Eitz Hadas, from the Achilu, from the Eitz Hadas. You know, you would say it happened in the conversation before, or after she ate from it. I don't know. I don't know how to say it in the sequence of events. All we know is that where Chazal to some degree get it from is because of the whole notion of the nakedness and the, you know, the awareness of nakedness are the touchstones of the story, you know, all the way along. So therefore there has to be that dimension. It's real physicality of a human being, and we, you know, again, it's so easy to talk about, but it's so hard to do. But a person has to look different.
I saw a magic on Instagram. So, of course, let's say that Cain was a byproduct somehow of that union.
Yes. It's written in many midrashim. that was Zohar. That's from that Cain was from the Nachash.
See the Moshe Nafasuk. Kaniti Yish Et Hashem. What does that mean? She's saying Kaniti. I created it.
Without Adam, huh?
What?
Without Adam, you mean?
It's not more of an Adam, because it's her creation. Hashem's kind of a...
Oh, no,
Hashem's a tag along.
Right.
That's what's called a cotton and eye acquisition.
Right,
that's
correct. Right.
I mean, that would mean that all mankind came from the snake. Well, half.
But Cain...
I heard a tail over
but
there.
But Cain was both.
The model for the tail. Furry little model.
But Cain is ultimately Cain is not Mekai in the world. I mean, unless Eshes Nayach, you know, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
I heard something tonight that was the gayest something you said earlier, which was very beautiful in the Shira, that Rav Yisrael Salanter would get, I think it was Rav Yisrael Salanter, he would get so drunk, but he would never lose at all, like his ability to just act as if he wasn't, basically act like a mensch who's not. And then he would reach, it would be so, and basically he would just pass out. But like, never at any point did he lose his, you know, mensch.
I want to tell you a fascinating thing. I had the same experience with my Rebbe Zichrono Livracha, Herbert Weinberg. He was a big man, he wasn't a fat man at all, but he was a very big man. Else he would drink a lot of wine. He would be a little more relaxed, that's all. Never lost it. I'll tell you an amazing thing. I don't know if any of you know at all, Rav Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi.
From Ed Teres?
From Ed Teres. So he's a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. I just met him. I took a group to Eretz Yisrael. I just met him. He had Malav Malk with us and felt very, very, very engaging man and a fantastic Talmud Chacham and it's just very, very, very impressive. Very, very impressive. So I was flying back from Eretz Yisrael and I was flying with your Rebbe, with my cousin Beryl Gershenfeld. He was on the flight, so we spent a couple of hours talking together. He asked about our trip, so he says, oh, I have good stories about Baruch Mordechai. So I just will tell you one of them. That he was once flying with Rav Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi back to Chutz Laretz, from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, and Rav Baruch Mordechai came to see him. They weren't sitting in the same area of the plane, and they came to see him. He was talking to him, and then he said that he says in the conversation, he says, "No, I came to see you earlier, but you were sleeping." He says, "Yeah." So he says, "I want you to know." He says, "I don't sleep on a plane." He says, "Why don't you sleep on a plane?" I heard a lot of people can't sleep on a plane. He says, "I can sleep on a plane. But before I fly, I take a good nap so I can be up for the whole flight. And on the plane, I write, he's published my Sfarim, I write my Sfarim, I write my Shurim, I write them on the plane." He says, "Because," he says, "you know, I'm a human being. Tell Malakim, also, you know, like Rosh Shiva." He says, "You ever see a person when they're sleeping? You know, like that." It's like, I can't do that. Tell Malakim, when I'm home, I sleep, but the door's closed, you know. I can't sleep in public. Tell Malakim. He's a very Stolz Heverner, you know, like his Slabodka, you know, something like that. But, isn't it unbelievable? I fall asleep before the plane takes off. you're so before you say you have to do 3 weeks worth of work before you go away for 2 days. You know, like that's, you know, like that's what it is. There's such a thing. That's what we're living. We're living to. We have to show that we're not just. We're something bigger, greater. And that's what's supposed to come out from Purim, is even when your guard is down, you're bigger, you're greater. It's a different story. Okay. go to sleep and close the door. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you very much. It was
thank
a pleasure.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
So why is the doctor the Jewish ideal?
The doctor is Amish from Esther. Rav Putner wrote a letter to one of his Talmidim, and he said the thing that he admires is example of, I don't know anywhere in any of his letters where he mentions a person that he admires, but he says there was a Dr. Wallach in Shaare Tzedek who used to do surgery, and before he did surgery on the patient, he asked him, "What's your name and your mother's name?" And he would daven for them. He says there's no greater example of a person who's bringing Torah to the world than doing that together. So Dr. Davin Shmonesrei is the greatest name.